Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So welcome to another edition of On The Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lassie Watson.
On today's edition, what on earth is going on at one of the world's best-run football clubs? And will Bayern's Robert Lewandowski take out his frustration on Dortmund in this weekend's De Clásica? Also in Portugal, the great Benfica, a 7-0 up against seven men, including two goalkeepers, and at halftime, they still don't win the match. We're at a safe distance away to talk about sticking to the rules of football in the pandemic. And whilst your Juve and your Milans make the noise in Serie A, guess what Atalanta have been quietly up to again? So first up, let's talk about Der Klassiker, Andy. This legendary matchup between two of Germany's greatest clubs. It has a history going back, what, 50, 55 years now?
Yeah, and it's interesting. The Classica always feels like... It's come to mean Bayern versus Dortmund in recent years.
It's also come to mean Bayern are more likely to win than Dortmund in recent years.
Yeah, and I think that's really where the fit of De Classica comes from, because De Classica is Bayern versus next most likely, which has been Dortmund really over the last decade or so. But Hamburg have been in that spot before. And it goes back to, I guess, the feeling in German football is it's always who can beat Bayern. That is the way that the competition is framed. And it's felt, I don't know what you guys feel, but it's felt to me at various points this season, and bear in mind that they go into the Classica only 1 point apart, Dortmund only 1 point behind, despite the fact that they've had injuries, they've had a really embarrassing exit from the Champions League, which we talked about with Miguel last week, and arguably their goalkeeper Gregor Kobel has been their best player this season. They're only 1 point behind Bayern going into this. Now, I remember Walter M. Straten of Bild wrote a couple of weeks ago, "Thanks Bayern for trying to make a title race of it after they lost to Augsburg." And it does feel like that, and not just on the pitch at the moment, but off the pitch, that Bayern are driving themselves to distraction. That if it's going to be competitive, if there's going to be something to talk about, is what's happening internally with Bayern. And particularly, I think off the pitch is the more interesting bit of it at the moment, to be honest, because there is so much happening. Of course, there was the whole corona controversy with Joshua Kimmich saying he wouldn't get vaccinated, and then him and the other unvaccinated players having to come back from international duty when Niklas Süle got infected with COVID-19. Kimmich getting infected himself and getting his pay blocked because he had not got vaccinated. So we had all of that. And then we have this thing that's been bubbling under the surface for a while. The Qatar Airways sponsorship, which is not a new thing, the sleeve sponsorship that Bayern have, and which, to be clear, Bayern's hardcore fans have always protested. They have never been happy with this. There've been banners galore about it at the games, chants about it. And then last week, it was the annual shareholders meeting, which has been spiky before. This one was described by Uli Hoeneß, the former president, as the worst event involving Bayern that he'd ever been to, because Michael Ott, a trainee lawyer and a shareholder, had tried to get the club to speak about committing to ending the Qatar sponsorship in 2023 when the contract's up. Not breaking the contract early, but just not renewing it when it's up. Now, Bayern's board said there was no way to get it on the agenda. Michael Ott filed a complaint, an injunction he tried to get from the Munich District Court to make them deal with it, that they weren't ever able to provide that in time. And so Bayern said they couldn't discuss it. And Herbert Heiner, the president, said, right, we're shutting the meeting down. We're not going to discuss it. Hence, a lot of booing, a lot of people shouting Heiner out, stuff like that. And it's all been a bit raucous, and they're still recovering from it.
Well, you see, even though the off-field situation might be difficult for Bayern, when Bayern meet Dortmund in what we're calling the Classica, it's a tale of two number nines, surely.
That's one angle.
And one of them's a Norwegian, by the way.
Yes, he is. I don't know if we mentioned that on this pod.
No, well, we haven't mentioned it in a while.
Well, we're not mentioning it because you've got to mention it.
Of course.
That's why.
He's back. He wasn't expected to be back.
By the way, to all my Polish friends, the other one is one... Well, let me just say dzień dobry to all of you.
And hello till alla våra norska lyttare. Hvordan går det der hjemme?
Yeah, yeah.
Er det fint vær? Yeah. Sannsynligvis ikke.
He's done me like this before. Playing Norwegian records with swears on them.
I've done that a lot.
On national radio.
We did have some tungtvann on Talksport. That was quite controversial.
I don't know what you've just said, Lars, but I would like to apologise to all listeners just to be on the safe side.
No one in England knows what blanche hura means. That's fine. Listen, Erling Haaland was really not expected to be back for this game. I mean, when he initially got his injury, the word that was put out, and that was possibly to take some pressure off him and just to make people stop asking him and stop nagging. But what was said very publicly was that if he plays again this side of the winter break, it'll be a bonus. Hmm. So that was their initial prognosis. But he's been left alone then to recover as fast as he can. And I don't think anyone doubts his commitment to his craft and to get back on the field as fast as possible. And he is back, and he came on and scored a goal against Wolfsburg and looked good. And I suppose one positive for Dortmund is that you always wonder with Haaland a little bit, because there's such a circus around him, whether he is this danger of him outgrowing the club and being distracted by all this transfer speculation and stuff. Really, pretty much every game when he's been out, he's been in the stands and he's been heading every ball, and he's, you know, whenever the camera pans to him, he's like properly into it.
He looks like the perfect teammate, doesn't he?
Yeah, because whether he is that or not, he's certainly someone who is just unfathomably driven to success, and he understands that the team's success in his absence is important. Like, he wants to win the league, and he wants them to keep picking up points when he's not around. And actually, listen, if you have one of the best strikers in the world in your team and he's not there, that's never a good thing. But you could argue that perhaps it was a little bit healthy for Dortmund to have to go a couple of weeks without him, so that you put, you know, Doinel Malen into a situation with, like,
he's found form.
Hey, Doinel, you need to score goals now. Like, you know, and you need to other players around have to take a bit of responsibility. And like you said, they've not been convincing this season, Dortmund. You can't, there's been a lot of, like, as much as Bayern are a mess off the pitch, you know, Dortmund are as messy at just on the pitch, just at the back. Like, their defense is the AGM of the is the Bayern an AGM of the Bundesliga. Like, it's not very good, but they kind of getting away with it, but they've been scraping along and getting the points here and there. I mean, again, I hate to bring the nerdy stats into the thing, but if you look at their XG against, like expected goals against, which is a pretty decent measure of how a team is defending, Bayern obviously has the lowest XG against in the league, as you'd expect. But then Dortmund are not second. The list of players, the list of teams who have defended statistically better than Dortmund so far include Mainz, Gladbach, Hoffenheim, Freiburg, Wolfsburg, Union Berlin. Which is not ideal if you're Dortmund.
Doesn't tell the story, you see, because you're looking at defensive goals against, and I'm looking at what has traditionally been a cracker in terms of numbers of goals. We are going to see goals.
Yeah,
When the Klassiker, when Dortmund face Bayern Munich. This is the stats. I hate to do the stats on you, mate. I hate to do the stats on a statistician. But here's the stats. Robert Lewandowski gets an average of one goal per Der Klassiker.
Yeah.
And Erling Haaland gets an average of one goal per Klassiker.
Yeah, those are also good stats. Yeah, no one's disputing that Dortmund are a potent attacking outfit. I guess there's more rather than, you know, the concern is what happens at the back.
Yeah, and they're going to have to get busy, aren't they, in the front half of the pitch.
And you guys had a really good discussion on this and last week's OTC, I believe, when you talked about Dortmund and young Mr. Delaney was in speaking about their model of picking up the next superstar. I think you rightly said the problem isn't so much their model of they're getting the young players right. I mean, if you look at not just Haaland, you also look at Bellingham, you look at Reina, like their model of picking up the next superstar, they're doing that really well. They're identifying the right young players to put faith in. The problem is the guys who are meant to help them carry the load. I mean, the guys they've brought in
who are earning a heinous amount of money.
In some cases, at tremendous expense, actually, to be the older heads. Like guys like Witzel, Emre Can, Mats Hummels, I mean, they're either unavailable or underwhelming. And that is a problem for them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you were saying about Haaland before and his just need to win and his need for the team to win. I think that's something that's worth noting, because the way he has come back so quickly, he trained, didn't he, rehabbed with this guy who trains MMA fighters, who has said he's the most Haaland is the most motivated athlete he's ever worked with, which is quite a claim. Also, Dortmund,
you can
Dortmund
see that on the
Twitter.
Pitch, you know. I can see you can see some of that on the pitch
and off it, as Lars was saying. And I think it's quite interesting that Dortmund Twitter this week saying, "Look, I'm not bothered about." Loads of fans are saying, "I'm not bothered about us buying anyone in January. Let's just buy this MMA coach and like bring him to the club permanently, because everything rests on it, and he does have such a huge role in this." In terms of Bayern's issues off the pitch. They have tried to diffuse this, by the way, in recent days ahead of De Clasica. So Herbert Heiner has organised a meeting with Michael Ott, this guy who's trying to bring the motion about the Qatar sponsorship, a personal meeting with him. They've written to all their members and shareholders to say, yeah, well, you know, we understand there's been a bit of disquiet, but bear in mind, we kept the ship sailing very nicely during the pandemic and we're still making money and you should respect that. And you're like, well you know.
Come back to them next year during the World Cup. I expect, you know, the sponsorship by Qatar will come under renewed focus next year when the World Cup's taking place.
Well, yeah, they'll be obliged to, I expect, do lots of photo opportunities for it. So there will be absolutely no avoiding of it. But it is interesting because Bayern, not necessarily for this Clásica, in which I would assume they'll do pretty well. I think looking into the medium term, it's interesting because, of course, Hernes is gone, Rummenigge is gone, Oli Kahn is all of a sudden having to deal with all this stuff. And keeping Bayern running smoothly, when you've had two guys who've been doing it for the best part of 30, 40 years, it's not a given. You know, we know Bayern is a club that's gone from strength to strength over the last 8 to 10 years. But keeping it on the straight and narrow, keeping it moving as it should, is tough. I think it's something worth keeping an eye on.
Who's got the tougher challenge? Sorry, you go ahead, Lush.
I just want to pick up on something you said. You're expecting... It's not that I disagree, but I'd like you to maybe expand and ask you to expand. You're expecting Bayern to do well in this Clásica, which I guess on the surface of it you think, well, yes, because Dortmund, yes, they're 1 point back, but that is a slightly false position, I think, if you look at their performances. I mean, of those two teams, Bayern have been very good. They've just had a couple of accidents a couple of times, but as a team, the team is functioning well. They're looking imperious, whereas Dortmund have sort of been scraping by, and you wonder, hang on, how did they get that many points? Because there have been quite a few games where they've been iffy, right? So from that perspective, you think we're heading for another Bayern tonking of the type that they've handed out to Dortmund quite a few times in recent years. But of course, there is a subplot here, which is quite aside from all the AGM kerfuffle. There's the controversy of the unjabbed five and Kimmich not being around. And Kimmich missing is a big deal from this team. I mean, it really is. Especially when, I mean, we don't know yet, so maybe it's a sort of duff thing to bring up, but Leon Goretzka apparently visited the doctors yesterday, so there might be a slight injury concern over him as well. So with Kimmich not there, a small question mark over Goretzka, certainly that midfield is looking a bit...
Well, that's meant to be the core of their midfield and Germany's midfield. You're absolutely right. I think the other thing, though, that is going to have an influence on this is the crowd. Because clearly with rising corona numbers and certainly rising concern over Omicron, there's an issue with crowds in Germany at the moment. We are heading towards the era of more ghost games, more empty stadiums, which is the last thing any of us want to see, but that is the way it's going, certainly temporarily. Now, Leipzig have already played one game behind closed doors. Bayern, going forward, Markus Söder, the leader of the Bavarian parliament, said this week, will be playing behind closed doors for the foreseeable. And it looks like, despite there being a full crowd in the northwest for the Cologne Gladbach derby last week, it looks like it will be limited to a third of capacity this game, which is not empty. But I think playing in front of a full Westfalen, which would be an advantage to Dortmund, an advantage that, you know, any advantage is a good one in their situation because, you know, they don't have the same means as Bayern. To have it slashed a bit, I do think is a bit of an issue. I mean, what they've done this week is it was sold out. They've cancelled all the tickets and you have to reapply for a limited number of tickets, which could yet be further reduced before Saturday, of course.
Well, we should keep an eye on that because, of course, what happens in Germany, if the recent history tells us anything, is going to happen elsewhere in Europe in terms of football capacities. Although there is another twist to this De Clasica which of course is one of those two centre forwards has played for both teams and scored against the other team, and that's Mr. Lewandowski. I wondered, though, what I was going to ask when you were talking about partly the model, which seems unsustainable, to always sort of replenish yourself with new talent to the level of, you know, your Jude Bellinghams and your thing is, Erling Haalands, I was going
to
say.
Thing is, it's the only model, really. I mean, it's just a question of whether you want to buy very young players who you think can become the best in the world, or you want to buy slightly older players who the biggest clubs don't want. I mean, financially, Dortmund can compete with the top sort of 6, 7, 8 clubs in Europe, no matter what they do. So,
it's not the only model, because you said, you accepted that Dortmund have got these other players, these more veteran players, and having them a very, very vast salary to be able to make sure that model works.
Vast compared to what Gladbach and Hoffenheim can pay, but not vast compared to what Bayern can pay. And if they were good enough to play for a team like Bayern, they wouldn't be at Dortmund.
Just very quickly,
I mean, there's a hierarchy, like in football, and you can get it right. Sometimes players are sort of misjudged by the market, and sometimes you get players who the bigger clubs discard for dumb reasons. But by and large, I mean, the people running the bigger clubs usually know what they're doing in terms of talent identification. And so for Dortmund, it's not just, it's often portrayed as ideology, like we want the young players because the young players are great. For Dortmund, it is also their best chance at having, albeit briefly, some of the best players in the world at their club, because you can't sign them when they're at their peak.
Ribery, Frank Ribery ile geliyor Bayern Münih. Ribery ceza sahasında pası Arjen Robben son çizgide ortaya çevirdi topu alardı gol! Mandzukic! Gol Mandzukic! Bayern Münih golü buldu. Bayern Münih 1-0 önde. Wembley'de kırmızı beyaz taraf yıkılıyor. Sarı siyahlı taraf donlu kaldı.
What on earth is happening in the Portuguese league? There was a match just earlier this week that, well, Benfica were up 7-0 at half time and they still didn't win the match. And that doesn't give any explanation to the background of this, but perhaps you'd like to.
Belenenses had two goalkeepers.
Yeah, they did.
Well, you'd think they'd managed to keep a clean sheet under those circumstances.
There could be an argument for playing two goalkeepers against Benfica, such as the financial gulf between them and some of the other teams.
I think one of them will get a red card, won't they? Handball.
Well, that's it. I mean, what happened, to recap for those who might have missed the story, Belenenses SAD, as we will come back to in a minute.
SAD, indeed.
They had a corona outbreak, so which they informed the league of before the game. So with 16 or 17 out, they started their game against Benfica, which was allowed to go ahead on the Saturday, with 9 players, two of which were goalkeepers, a goalkeeper in and a goalkeeper out, against a club in Benfica that has, what, I don't know, 50 times the budget they do. It's enormous, the difference. They also managed to score an own goal 25 seconds in, which wasn't the perfect start. Yeah, it's fair to say.
And they were trying to keep it tight and hit them on the counter, and which just didn't come off.
There were limited opportunities to do with a 5-3-0 formation. Anyway, it's 7-0 at half time. Only 7 of the 9 players come back out for the second half. Now, what happens is when Belenenses kick off for the second half, 7-0 down, player 1 taps it to player 2, back to player 3, who, you know, when you have someone in the centre circle who sort of launches it forward into the corner, sort of rugby style. It was actually the outfield goalkeeper who did this. Whacks it into the corner, goes down, holding his calf. I can't carry on. Obviously, they go down to 6 at that point. The referee has to abandon the game. And
those are the rules when it goes down to 6.
Yeah, when it goes down to 6.
I mean, shouldn't he have done that straight away, like after kickoff? And then, I mean, the walkover is what, 5-0 or something?
3.
So in terms of goal difference, I mean, that would have been a lot better.
Yeah. I don't know why anyone ever thought this game could finish. I mean, some of these players were under 23 players. When Belenenses originally informed the league that they were going to have a problem with this fixture, there were not only the positive cases quarantined, but some who were quarantined due to contact tracing. And it was only due to a couple of those being released that they could make the nine. So the league trying to pin this on Belenenses, who the league have insisted, well, they never asked us to postpone the game. It's your competition. It's up to you to make the decision. And there's been considerable feeling that TV money and betting sponsorship had strongly influenced the desire to carry on with this and to not refund tickets and all that sort of stuff. Now, you see Rui Pedro Suarez, who's the president of Belenenses, leaving the pitch when this was called off in tears. They have come out and not just disputed the league's version of events.
So it was in tears?
Yeah.
It's only 7-0, was it?
Well, no, it's more the embarrassment. It's more the embarrassment to the league, not the result. That you can have a game that kicks off with nine players. Now, the league's COVID protocol says if you've got eight, you can play. So there was a protocol in place. It's just a terrible one.
And
it's a terrible one from last year when the pandemic originally happened in 2020. So basically, the league have said that Belenenses didn't try and call the game off, so it's their fault. Belenenses have looked at it and said, well, the league, who have started a disciplinary process to see if Belenenses or even Benfica are responsible for going ahead with this, to abdicate their own responsibility, which I find remarkable. I mean, they sent an email, Belenenses, to the league to say this is the situation. What they got back was not an email reply, but a WhatsApp to the president, to Mr. Suarez, going, well, these are the eight players we think you've got available, so we think you should get on with it. And obviously he has receipt of that. The way the league are dealing with this is an embarrassment. And, you know, there are other aspects to this as well, because it doesn't reflect well on Portuguese football in general. Because
It doesn't reflect well on Benfica, you know, a club of their stature playing against a team of depleted numbers.
Is there a case to be made, Andy?
Banging in the goals as if, you know, we're really having, we've got a match on here.
They didn't take their shirts off while they were celebrating.
I mean, that would have been very funny. Like, do really elaborate celebrations, like the one with the fish and all of that.
And they did slow down the celebrations after about four or five goals up. I do get that. But, you know, it's embarrassing, isn't it? You're a professional footballer coming out to play a team that couldn't possibly beat you.
Yeah, but I guess there's a case to be made, Andy, that even though the league was dealing with this very dreadfully, maybe Benfica should have just said, this is nonsense, let's not play this game.
Yeah, I think the way that you're drilled in Portugal is A, to be suspicious of the authorities, and B, to know that you cannot afford to put a foot wrong, especially this season when the gap between the top three and the rest is absolutely historic, which makes for a great title race between the three teams who always contest the title. But I think that they're in the mindset of, we've just got to turn up and do our job, however difficult the situation.
Because
we can't be penalised for this. And I think that's fair enough. Now, we saw Jorge Jesus with his head in his hands by the touchline, on the touchline, going, what on earth is going on here, for the second time in a week, after Seferovic's miss at the...
Except this time it was too many goals from Seferovic was the problem.
Exactly.
Can't do anything right, that guy.
He can't hit a happy medium.
But I mean, you said that they turned up and did their job. I mean, they didn't have to field their strongest 11 here. Let's be fair. Like, you didn't have
to field 11.
Darwin Núñez didn't have to start, you know, Julian Weigl, Seferovic. Like, Vertonghen started. Why don't you give him a rest? He's 100 years old. Like, this is at halftime they brought on Adel Taarabt to do some nutmegs, I guess, which is the correct thing to do in this situation.
Wait, is he still playing?
Of course.
After his appearance at Barcelona earlier in the week,
I
think that it could have been said to, you know, it being a conciliatory gesture.
Trying to hold off a Barcelona player and just elbowing him in the face and giving away a foul, that was very eccentric behaviour.
The other interesting thing is where Belenenses are, because I called them at the beginning Berlinensisch SAD, which is the abbreviation for the equivalent of a PLC in Portugal.
PLC so, rather than FC, AFC.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Because going back a couple of years, there's a schism between the sporting side of Berlinensisch and the PLC. So the equivalent of the PLC, the SAD, they retain the place in the top division. Berlinensisch, other Berlinensisch, play in the third tier, the sporting side of them, play in the third tier, and they play at the Restelo, back in Berlin, the traditional stadium of the first team, where they played Bayern Munich in the UEFA Cup and all that sort of stuff. They've got this incredible history there. And so one of the interesting comments out of the back of this was Belenenses, who still play at Restelo. Now, this Belenenses, BSAD, who lost 7-0 to Benfica, they play at Jamor, which is the national stadium, slightly outside the centre of Lisbon. Now, Belenenses, Os Belenenses, they have come out and said, well, BSAD are embarrassing the name of this club. So that's the other angle to it. Just when you thought it couldn't get any weirder.
Yeah.
There's a second team that, well, obviously I couldn't lend them any players for ethical reasons. But
I remember when Man United fans used to say that about the other lot once upon a time. Anyway, the city of Manchester continues. We do need a reference. And by the way, I do remember you telling us about Adel Terret playing. So I was only joking.
He's found himself. But, he's having a great time.
We had that conversation a few weeks back. But I was just trying to help you out with your jokes.
I actually spoke to someone who knows him quite well not that long ago, who says he's really like cleaned his act up and is, shall we say, more focused off the pitch than he used to be.
Yeah, Bruno Lage revived his career at Benfica, actually.
I suppose. It's certainly one of those things where maybe the penny finally dropped and he looked at his birth date and, you know, just realised I don't have that many years left doing this.
A couple of years in the reserves at Benfica will do that.
Yes, when the penny finally drops. So is it? It's not pennies anymore, is it?
I can tell you, with my knowledge of Portuguese cuisine and Portuguese wine, I would not become healthier if I moved to Lisbon.
No, quite the opposite, my friend. A lot of salt. You get kidney stones, no doubt. Anyway, we do need a little bit of Scandinavian wisdom or Nordic wisdom on this, though. What should they have done? How would they have done it in Norway if a team then signed up or started off the game saying that we're down?
I don't think we would have gotten to that, because as much as, you know, I think most countries' people are unhappy with their FAs for various reasons. I'm not going to say our FA is perfect and do everything right and whatever, but I don't think we would have ever gotten to this point where we would have said, well, you don't have enough players, but, you know, off you go. I don't think that would have actually happened.
Because once upon a time, certainly in cup competitions, despite the players that you register at the beginning of the season, if you do have a problem. Do you remember when Wycombe Wanderers had that problem in the FA Cup and there was that Roy Essendow that came on? They literally just went on social media or whatever. Or
It wasn't social media in those days. It was teletext. Teletext.
Indeed. Yeah, do you know what that is, kids? Trust me. Anyway, and they managed to get a player to come in and stand in because they were short of a centre forward because somebody had gone down with an injury. And it wouldn't have made a great cup competition if they were to play without a centre forward.
Are you thinking that that's the only thing that could have made this situation more embarrassing, if it had been two fans to make the 11?
But you would have thought that the sensible thing would be to say to the Portuguese authorities, say, look, because of coronavirus, we are going to relax the rules on you being able to adopt a player to face just one match or whatever. That would have been the sensible thing, wouldn't it?
You see, what you're doing is you're attaching the concept of
logic,
common sense, to Portuguese football governance.
That's why I studied
not
philosophy,
gonna happen.
Mate.
I just think Adel Terap should have played the entire game for Belenenses.
Korkunç bir maç bugün. Ceza sahası için ikinci gol şansı. Fark 2'ye çıkıyor. Seferovic 2-0 yaptı. Belenenses.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I do love it when you look at the great European leagues and you see one of the unusual suspects lurking in the shadows, like Leicester City, to win the title. And it seems like that's what you could argue is happening in Italy.
Well, I sort of wonder if we're not giving Atalanta enough love, because they're a team who have still a bottom half wage budget in Serie A, but have established themselves quite firmly in the top four.
They look good of
Italy.
They look good.
That they do, and they had a tricky start to this season. And yet, now they're absolutely flying. Last weekend, they won at Juventus, and they didn't steal it. They deserved to, with another really good finish by Duvan Zapata.
Viva Zapata!
Exactly. They hammered Venezia in the week, which you would expect them to do, with Mario Pašalić hat-trick, and he's playing very well at the moment. Of course, he was on the books at Chelsea for absolutely ages. And I just think we've almost come to take Atalanta, A, being very entertaining, and B, getting excellent results. They're already, 6 points clear in fourth place? And obviously Roma having a mini implosion has sort of fueled that a little bit, and Juventus struggling a bit has fueled that as well. But I just think we can't reiterate enough what an incredible job Giampiero Gasperini and his team have done, because I think there are loads of factors to this. Not only are we assuming that them finishing top four or competing top four or even competing for the title, which, you know, they finished second last season and they could certainly do that. We take that as a given now, which is wrong. I don't think we should take that as a given.
I don't think we take it as a given, Andy.
I think a lot of people do say...
Dumb people.
Atalanta are a top four team now. We assume a certain level from them. We assume even a certain level in the Champions League from them. And it's not only the wage bill. I think you look at everything that's happened to them over the last year and a half. The fact that Bergamo was one of the places in Europe first hit and most badly hit by COVID.
That very well, actually. I think it was the first. Yeah. That's when the police literally locked down that entire region.
Yeah, terribly so. And so there's been a big emotional fallout from that. Then on top of that, you've got the not getting through to the Champions League semi-final later that year. They were beaten out by Paris Saint-Germain just at the end. And again, that could have felt like the end of an era. You have the very painful loss of club totem Papu Gomez after his fallout with coach and president. Now at Sevilla, of course. And also, I don't think you can underrate the fact that, you know, they've always had this great academy, Atalanta, and added smart signings around it. A lot of those recent signings haven't really come off that well. I think you look at Alexei Miranchuk, you look at Kovalenko, who's gone off on loan to Spezia. I think you even look at Koopmeiners, who was really sad to leave the Netherlands and has a bit of a tricky start, though he did score his first goal for the club against Venezia this week, so maybe that will be the start for him. So and then you've got the fact that no one apart from Zapata was scoring goals at the start of the season. Now Pašalić, on the back of that hat-trick, I mean, he's up to, I think, 7 in the league, so they've started to mount that up. But Luis Muriel's not hit his best so far this season. Josip Iličić, in terms of fitness, is always a bit of a mixed bag. So there are a few things that have gone wrong for them. They've had an absolute catalogue of injuries in defence, and yet here they are, challenging again. It's remarkable.
They are remarkable, and I guess it's worth talking about Gasperini again. He signed a new contract this week, and we do get questions occasionally from listeners on why Gasperini isn't regularly in the frame for bigger jobs. And having signed a contract this week, I suppose, is a very strong signal from him that he's very happy and comfortable where he is. And I do wonder, there are a couple of things here. First of all, is that, I mean, I suppose you would imagine he got quite badly burned personally by the experience at Inter, where he sort of was brought in and was fired almost immediately, like was given no time at all to implement his way of doing things. The other thing is that, I mean, Gasperini's system is very particular. I mean, they play like very few other teams, Atalanta, and it's not an easy thing to go into a new club and implement. It takes a certain amount of patience. It takes a club who will find the right players for you and will let you develop that. And that's, this isn't something you're going to have everywhere. And it's certainly not something you're going to have at a quote-unquote bigger club. So I guess he's just very, very comfortable where he is. And I think another factor of why...
What is his system? Sorry, before you go into the other factor...
Well, formation-wise, it's a sort of 3-4-3 thing, but it's also, it's very, very front foot. Like, I mean, the sort of wide centre halves will also often go forward. It's all about creating overloads on the flanks, so you can put a lot of crosses into the box. It's part of why Zapata is so important for them. And even in periods where not everything is going their way, you can still rely on Zapata to score a lot of goals, because if you chuck a lot of crosses in towards Zapata, he's going to send quite a few of them towards goal. It's what he does. But it's quite risky because he pushes a lot of players high up the field. You're asking a lot from the central two in midfield in terms of covering the spaces from where everyone's run away. And you're asking your central defenders to be better on the ball probably than what's normal for a centre-half. So there's a lot of sort of bits and pieces that have to fall into place. And Gasperini hasn't been successful at every club he's been at, because some places it just hasn't been able to make this work. Now, I think another factor here in terms of them being successful is that they managed to hold on to some of the players. Like, they have lost some, obviously.
Zapata's a good example, isn't it?
Yeah, some of the players that are crucial to this system working, they've been able to hang on to over the last couple of years. Whereas usually when a provincial club gets involved in the top, usually they just get robbed. I mean, most of their players go off somewhere. But with Zapata, who's very important to their system, he's 30. So, I mean, even if anyone who wants to sign him would have to pay a lot of money, because he's very important to this team. But also, he's 30. I mean, clubs very rarely pay huge money for someone that age who isn't like a global superstar. So it's been easier for them in that way to hang on to him. You know, Iličić, as you mentioned, has his fitness problems. He's an important piece of the puzzle here, but you can't rely on him to be fit every week. And he's 33. No one's going to go and throw a ton of money after Iličić. You know, similar story with some of the defenders like Toloi and Palomino are past 30. So again, they're not necessarily going to get tempted away. So actually, the fact that these aren't like, it's not like Dortmund when they sign like all the best 18-year-olds in the world and they run rampant and it's so exciting and then the sharks start circling. With Atlanta, they've been able to keep hold of some of these guys, and that's part of why the success, I think, is rolling on.
I think there is that sense of it is a nice place to work and to be, isn't there? And Zapata is a good example of that. I mean, he said recently that he was really tempted when Inter sounded him out as a possible Lukaku replacement. Mm. But he said in the end, look, I'm happy here, I'm valued here, my family feel good here. And all those things, all those things do matter.
That's so good to hear, mate. Because sometimes you wonder, why does a footballer leave their comfort zone, if you like? I know ambition and everything like that, but so often a great footballer goes to another club and can't replicate it. And it'll be interesting to look at the stats, whether that's more likely than less likely, because obviously the opposite is true as well.
I just wonder, in a season where Napoli and Milan have opened the league up, and of course Inter have really recovered recently and in great form, they've really closed the gap at the top. You've got Milan losing a couple of games recently, although they came back and won at Genoa last night because, well, you would win at Genoa, wouldn't you? Then you have Napoli dropping these 2 points by letting a two-goal lead go at Sassuolo. I just wonder if the league is opening up in a way that Atalanta could have a little pop at it this season. I don't think it's to be ruled out.
Because you just think Napoli will collapse at some point anyway because they're Napoli and that's what they do.
Well, they've got Victor Osimhen out for 3 months.
With a broken face.
With a broken face, exactly.
And they've dropped a couple of points recently, only one win in the last four. You know, yeah. Things creaking a bit.
Yeah,
Spalletti, you never know. Like, he's a bit of an odd one. He can implode, as we've seen.
Well, he got a red card last night at Sassuolo. So, yeah, maybe this is the start of it. I think it's a bit early to talk about an implosion. Maybe they've just been, I would argue, they've probably just been over par this far. But I think it's very, very interesting Serie A, especially with Juventus having basically played themselves out of it already.
Was that 4-0 against Venice flattering? Because the Venice defence looked just all over the place. I just wonder whether we can judge Atalanta based on that.
The canals through the defence were open. The gondolas were streaming through. One of the goals was the little chip from the little dink in from Iličić was amazing.
Yeah.
It was
amazing. But I do think you're right. Like, more of it is about the way that they won at Juventus last weekend. And I think the fact that they can close out a 1-0 at a competitor is almost like that's something that you don't really expect they can do. You think of them as that sort of front foot team, as Lars was describing. So if they can grind out a 1-0 win as well, I think that's pretty impressive.
And that's with Chiesa, doing his best to try and bang them in as well. Still my favourite footballer.
I just committed some really bad podcasting there. I sort of vaguely referenced something I'd seen without explaining it very well to the listener. That's right. Okay. Can I just say to the listener, just really every week on the Monday, if you're not up to anything, just check out Atalanta's goals from the weekend. You know, more often than not, there'll be one or two brilliant team goals in there. It's almost every week. Mm. And the same was the case against Venezia. Let's see this weekend.
Just to remind you, you can tweet us at any time during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotson Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Lars.
Stevenson.
I was thinking Lars as opposed to Lars. Apologies.
It's fine. Listen, I've seen some commentary on this on the internet. You're pronouncing my name as if I was Swedish, and yes. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it either.
Usually in this country, just pronounce my name however you want. It's all good.
As you know, Peter is like a Scandinavian name as well. I have friends called Peter from Scandinavia. I can't call them Peter when they're over here. Exactly. You know exactly what I'm doing. Anyway, as always, you can tweet us any time of the week. So a couple of questions on Serie A. From Alex Moore, just how good is Dusan Vlahovic and where does he go to next?
I think it's an interesting question. Vlahovic, again, on the score sheet this week for Fiorentina in the win over Sampdoria. What I particularly like about him is the fact that they're having trouble, Fiorentina, extending his contract. But he's not letting it bother him in the slightest. He's not letting it affect his form. I think the fact that Vincenzo Italiano has created a more interesting, exciting Fiorentina side around him this season is really valuable to him. On the other hand, you look at his goals in this calendar year, he's broken every Fiorentina calendar year goal scoring record there is. And I feel pretty sure we've mentioned this recently, but you think this is a club that has had Baggio, Battistuta, prime Adrian Mutu. It's pretty amazing to hit that sort of record, especially at 21. He was great last season. He's great again this season. Very intelligent on the deck. Terrific in the air. Great header he scored this week against Samp. I think the Premier League is probably the most obvious landing spot because he's going to cost a lot of money. They've priced him at 70 million euros. Why would they come down from that? Because he's that good.
I mean, Juventus should really, but they probably don't have the money.
No, probably not. Not even
if they could find it, then that's what they should do. Basically, that would be the Bayern Munich move.
So you just want to foster a little bit more love and understanding in Serie A by getting another star Fiorentina player to move
very,
to Juventus.
Very popular in Florence.
That's good of you. I reckon a 2-year loan plus a buy at the end of it would make everyone happy.
And don't forget, it's at Lars Severson if you want to complain and have a proper end.
I've got a tweet from Michael Heslop that's not in the script, but I want to mention it because I thought it was really good. Because a listener, Michael Heslop, who says, you've got $1 billion to invest in a European football club. Who are you buying and why is it not Hertha? I do believe our listener is based in Berlin, so I guess this is something that... Listen, Hertha is a really good shout in theory because there should be a big club in Berlin, right? And there isn't, but as we've seen, it's not. You can't just chuck some money onto it and see what happens. You need a bit more of a coherent project. But I wanted to answer this question, and again, in light of something you guys were talking about last week, which was, I think Valencia is so ripe for a takeover by someone who has a bit of money and idea what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because that club is being so under, as far as an asset, it's being so poorly managed by Peter Lim and their lot now. You know, Valencia is the third biggest city in Spain. Their fans see themselves as a club that should be the third biggest club in the country. Now, that might sound delusional right now, and it has at many points of their history sounded slightly delusional, but really this is a big club, and the Spanish league right now, with Real Madrid not being quite where they ought to be, with Barcelona being in state of crisis, that league, as you said last week, is just ripe for someone to come in with a bit of joined up modern thinking and some different ideas of what to do on the pitch and how to recruit and just to really do something in that league. So if you're a wealthy guy out there who has a lot of money to spend, turning Valencia into a force in Spain, I think, would be a tremendous project.
So if you're buying and backing Valencia financially, do you keep Bordalas as coach just for fun?
Maybe like for the first year or something. What does Bordalas do with lots of money? It's one of the great questions.
Throw it out of play. I mean,
buy the angriest players in the world and just kick everyone.
To go back to the original question, the reason you don't spend that billion on Hertha Berlin is because they'll still be mid-table.
You said it, not me, mate.
Devastating.
But by the way, that's at Andy Bressel. And this from JD Cameron. Gianluca Scamacca is in great form for Sassuolo. Could he be an option for Italy come the World Cup, given their number 9 challenge at the moment?
JD is absolutely on the money here. I'm on the same page as him. I think Scamacca's a really, really interesting player. Early 20s with the ability to grow. He's a real presence. He looked good at Genoa last season, and there's a limited amount you can do there. But in a better team in Sassuolo, he looks the part, particularly. Obviously scored in the winner at Milan at the weekend. Scored an even better goal, an incredible finish against Napoli in that comeback this week as well. I think if he carries on the way he is, he's going to be the subject of a big transfer. You're talking about if Juventus need that presence up front, this is the sort of level they're going to be buying at rather than Vlahovic, Lars, I think, going forward.
Well, it's time to now for both of you to recommend a game of the week. Mine, by the way, is the Clásica, so you can't have that.
Damn it.
Right.
Yeah, I can see you're both impressed. Anyway, who wants to go first? Lars?
I mean, the thing is, we usually take this as an opportunity to talk about something we haven't talked about yet. But I kind of wanted Napoli-Atalanta anyway, because I just think it is the game. There's some stuff going on in La Liga as well. Maybe Andy will get to that. I don't know what Andy's pick is yet, but I think you need to be watching Napoli versus Atalanta this weekend, just because, like we've mentioned, Napoli have been the runaway leaders, and it has looked early on in the season as if this is finally going to be their year, but then they've lost the inspirational forward Victor Osimhen to what we flippantly described as a broken face, but I mean he has a broken bone in the face, which is bad.
Cheekbone. Yeah, eye socket. Yeah, it's pretty horrendous.
I think broken face is pretty fair. So he's going to be out for a while. They've already now drawn only 1-1 in the last 4, so maybe it's all coming apart. And Atalanta, as we spoke about, they're very good and they're always worth watching. This is my first language. Always worth watching.
Let's go back to your second language. Mm-hmm. What would you eat with it?
Ooh, Napoli. Well, this is very obvious. Like, it's a Napoli game, so you got to go with a good Neapolitan pizza if you're lucky enough to have an outlet near you that provides such a thing.
I'd have gone for the Leap
Fizz. You don't get any free promotion off this guy, do you?
No.
We were just discussing off air before that what I believe to be the best Neapolitan pizza in London, but I'm not telling anyone.
If you're in Northwest London and you're in that line of production, make him an offer. Yeah. Make him an offer.
We're going back to Marlon Brando, are we? With Viva Zapata.
Well, it would have to be the place. Like, I'm not plugging anyone who actually doesn't do very good. There is one place, and it's very good. But, okay. You know, they've not given me anything. I'm not telling them.
The gauntlet has been laid down.
Also, I don't want loads of people turning up
there. You can always overdo the match day dining. You know, you can always overdo it, can't you? It's easy sometimes to just send out for one, isn't it?
Maybe.
I've been seeing the adverts. They keep telling me, don't worry about that place in Northwest London. Come and order a pizza from us.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We'll deliver. Anyway.
Yeah.
Have you got a game of the week?
I do, and it's not the Lisbon Derby from Friday night, which I think will be enjoyable as well, even if it'll be past a few of your bedtimes. It doesn't kick off till 9:15. I'm going to go for Saturday night, Real Sociedad against Real Madrid. Up until very recently, despite a lot of injuries, Real Sociedad have been the league leaders, recently supplanted by Real Madrid, who weren't very good against Athletic in the week, but still managed to win, partly through some really dreadful Athletic finishing and partly through Thibaut Courtois, who was excellent again, and I think he's the best goalkeeper in Spain certainly at the moment, and it's been brilliant for the last couple of years. I think Real Sociedad have got an opportunity here, and the way they've changed and redeveloped Anoeta, or the Real Arena as it is now, to get rid of the running track and just bring the stands in, it has transformed the atmosphere there. It's a really tough place to go now. I think they can give them a game. They have so many interesting attacking options. As far as culinary options go,
ooh,
I think you've got to go the whole hog. And of course,
oh, right. I thought that was
seafood,
a clue.
Seafood, my friend.
I thought you were going to go for
seafood.
Some fofage to go with the Royal Fofiedad. Real Fofiedad.
Well,
fofage.
San Sebastian and the Basque region is incredible food. I agree with Lars. It has to be seafood.
It does.
I think you've got to go with some sort of squidding, black rice.
Yes.
Or something similar.
I'm going to go for the fofies.
I will have some cod.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.